This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
Well, thank you to all of you that are here this morning. I'm excited about Sunday school. I'm excited about where we're headed in our study in the book of Exodus. But you know, if nobody but the Sunday school teacher was here, it wouldn't be nearly as much fun. I'd still do it anyway, but there wouldn't be nearly as much fun. So I'm glad you're here this morning. I appreciate each of you that are here. By the way, TR was talking about Aubrey being a little bit hard-headed like all of us are. I don't know who he's talking about. The preacher's not hard-headed. All right, this morning we're in Exodus chapter number 18. We watched a film over the last 3 weeks in Sunday school because I wanted you to see the archaeological discoveries related to the Exodus. And we saw some things from there in Egypt before they came out of the land that had to do with the pits that apparently were designed by Joseph in order to store all that grain up during the 7 years of famine that were to come. And then we saw those things of the children of Israel, the potential crossing site of the Red Sea, and it's a pretty convincing argument that that is the place geographically as well as the archaeological remains that have been left behind, some of them even under the that particular finger of the Red Sea. So I think that is probably a good candidate for being the location. Then we saw some of the things that apparently are the left behind remnants of where the children of Israel were after they crossed the Red Sea. To me, one of the most amazing things is that rock of Horeb that looks like the rock from which the water came. It certainly looks like it very well may be. Then we saw there at the foot of what appears to be the real Mount Sinai, not the one the Catholic Church has tried to foist on everybody for 1,000 years, but the real Mount Sinai with the blackened top of it. And then down at the bottom of it, the remnants of where the children of Israel apparently built an altar to the Lord. And then there's also the remains of some things from where they must have been encamped there for almost a year, including what looks like the place where they erected that the golden calf while Moses was up on the mountain. So some interesting things. If you didn't get to see all the video, let me know. Text me this sometime this week, and I'll text you a link to it so you can watch whatever part of it you didn't get to see. But an amazing video. I enjoyed it. But now I'm ready to dive back into our verse-by-verse study as we continue through the book of Exodus. We're getting close to the Ten Commandments, but we're not quite there. So Exodus 18, look at verse 1. It says, "When Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, and that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back, and her two sons, of which the name of the one was Gershom, for he said, 'I have been an alien in a strange land,' and the name of the other was Eleazar, for the God of my father," said he, "was mine help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife unto Moses into the wilderness, where he encamped at the Mount of God. And he said unto Moses, 'I, thy father-in-law, Jethro, am coming to thee, and thy wife and her two sons with her.'" Now, believe it or not, I just read 6 verses. All of that is one long sentence. That's a long sentence. Now, it's actually a compound sentence because there are some semicolons in between there and some conjunctions in there and some colons in there separating the different parts of it. But that's one long sentence. But let's just try to boil it all down here. The children of Israel now with Moses are somewhere in this area on the east side of the Gulf of Aqaba, if you look at the map up here. So they're in this area. They're near what you and I are about to see is Mount Sinai. This is also the land where Moses had been on the backside of the desert for 40 years when he originally left Egypt, and he tended the flocks of Jethro, his father-in-law, for 40 years. This is also the place where he heard the Lord speak to him out of a burning bush. The burning bush, of course, that never burnt up. The Lord spoke to him there. So this is an area where Moses is familiar because he spent 40 years there. How could you live there for 40 years and not be familiar somewhat with the land? It doesn't mean he knew everything about the place, but, you know, as a shepherd, he would have, you know, had to move from place to place with his flocks because sheep, if you know anything about how they graze, they eat the grass right down to the roots. And so you have to constantly rotate where you have them so they don't just eat everything and then there's no grass and it's not going to ever grow back. So he would have been familiar with this area, moving around with his father-in-law Jethro's flocks for 40 years. Undoubtedly, he's somewhat familiar with the area. But this is also the place where his father-in-law Jethro lived. Now, we know that Moses originally had returned to the land of Egypt when God spoke to him and said, I want you to go back and lead my people out of Egypt. And then, of course, the Lord sent Aaron to come get him and go back with him. But here is Moses now. He's back in the place where his father-in-law resides. And apparently at some point along the way, having concern for his wife and his two sons, lest something happen to them with Pharaoh wanting him dead, Moses sent his wife and his two sons back to his father-in-law, Jethro. And so apparently Moses' wife, Zipporah, and his two sons were there in the land of Midian. So Moses has been without his wife and his two boys for at least since they left the land of Egypt, probably some amount of time before that. And so don't you imagine it must have been good for Moses just to see his wife and kids again and being away from them that long. And I'm sure he had some anxiety about whether they were okay. Undoubtedly, they had anxiety about whether he was okay. After all, with him going back and confronting Pharaoh, there was a possibility that, you know, he could have been executed. So I'm sure they were relieved to see his face again. And he was relieved to see theirs. What a great homecoming that must have been. So Moses meets his father-in-law Jethro, his wife Zipporah, and his two sons. Now, a couple of things we'll mention here about Jethro. Remember, we were told about Jethro just briefly earlier in the book of Exodus. What are some of the things that we were told about Jethro? Anybody? Well, he's a Midianite, and you see here on the map, this land is described as the land of Midian. That's the name for that region. What did the Bible tell us earlier about who Jethro was in the land of Midian? He had a particular claim to fame or something for which he was known among the Midianite people. Does anybody remember?
Priest.
That's right, Mary. The Bible told us he was the priest of the Most High God to the Midianites. So he's not an Israelite. He's not a descendant of Jacob. But he is, the Midianites are, way, way back, they are descendants of Abraham. So they're related to the Israelites, these Midianites are, but they're not Israelites. But they're from the same family. So they know of the true and living God. They know of the God of Abraham. And the Midianites, while they're not Israelites, apparently at least some of them have continued worshiping the true and living God even during hundreds of years of having no direct contact with the Israelites. They're still worshiping the God of Abraham as well, though they're not Israelites. So he was the high priest of the Midianite people. He was the one that led them in their worship of the true and living God. So there were other people in the world in these ancient times that did still know about the true and living God and worshiped Him. And Jethro was one of those. Then there's his wife, Zipporah. Now, I can't tell you how many times I've had different people try to convince me that Zipporah was a black woman. In fact, if you go online and you look up Zipporah, you'll see just hundreds and hundreds of people that are just totally convinced that Zipporah was a black woman from East Africa, further south, an Ethiopian or from that area that had married Moses, that Moses was married to a black woman. That is just not the case. We know from what we just spoke about regarding Jethro, her father, that Jethro was a Midianite. And the Midianites were descendants of Abraham. Abraham was from, he was descended from Shem, the son of Noah. So therefore they are Semites, Semitic people. We use that term today. And so Zipporah, being a Midianite, she was from the same family of people, the same ethnicity as Abraham, and therefore as Moses as well, as an Israelite. So she was not a black woman from Ethiopia or East Africa. She was a Semitic person, just like Moses was, and she probably looked just like Moses. So that's who Zipporah was, as the daughter of Jethro. She and Moses had two sons. The one is named Gershom, and the Bible tells us again the meaning of his name. We've seen it previously, but the name Gershom means, I have been an alien in a strange land. Moses had named Gershom that because when Gershom was born, Moses still felt like he was a stranger living in the land of Midian because he wasn't from Midian. He was an Israelite, but he was from Egypt. And so that's why he named his son this. I'm an alien in a strange land.
Would they have been white?
Mary's asking what their skin color would have been. There is some debate about what skin color the ancient Israelites had, Mary. I think I probably want to save that for another discussion when I have more time to delve into it. The Jews that live in the land today, most of them have, an olive complexion to them, like many of the peoples that live around them. There are a lot of the people who live in the land today that are Jews that are not actually the physical descendants of Abraham. In the early Middle Ages, there was an entire kingdom in what we today would call southern Russia, the Khazars, who converted to Judaism. And at some point in the beginning of modern history, they immigrated down from the land of southern Russia into the land. And even still to this day, they're coming back to the land. They are the descendants of people who converted to Judaism, but they were not born the physical descendants of Abraham. So they do have that, a different color to them, a different appearance to them than the physical descendants of Abraham. Then you have some Jews who look pretty much just like a Caucasian person does, with a lighter skin, a whiter skin. And you still see some of them there in Israel today, including some in their government today that look just like Europeans. So there are different types of people who call themselves Jews. Some of them are the physical descendants of Abraham, undoubtedly, and some of them are people who converted to Judaism and moved there. I will say that there are some descriptions in the Bible of what Jews look like in places, and I'll maybe cover that at another time. Maybe we'll take a Wednesday night or something. David was described as being very handsome and having a ruddy complexion. Ruddy means, you know, a reddish color, and there are different Bible scholars that argue about what that passage means. Some of them say, well, that means David was he had a reddish complexion all over. There are others who say, no, that means he was light-skinned, like a Caucasian. And if you've ever known somebody who either was blonde-haired or red-headed, they usually have fair skin, but if they get flushed, their cheeks get reddish color, and we call that being ruddy. So even with that description in the Bible, there are Bible scholars still argue about what that literally means. So I don't know the answer to what their skin color was, but whatever Moses looked like, Zipporah looked a whole lot like him because they were very, even though it was distant related, they were from the same gene pool. So we have Gershom. His name means I've been an alien in a strange land. Then Moses' other son, Eleazar, his name means for the God of my father was mine help. We see a similar name later in the Old Testament, Ebenezer, which means rock of my help. This name means God of my help. El, meaning God, and Ezer, meaning help. So God of my help is the meaning of his name. So Jethro has come. He's brought Zipporah and the two boys. They've met up with Moses, with all the children of Israel, and as we've said before, there were probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 3 to 3.5 million Israelites in all at this time that had left Egypt. Look at verse 7 with me. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and did obeisance. Now, what does obeisance mean?
Obey.
It comes from the same root word as obey. That's right. It means to do honor to. So it means Moses would have probably gotten down on his knees, as was the custom of that part of the country, that part of the world at that time in particular, but they still do many of those same things today in the culture there. He would have either bowed himself or gotten down on his knees, but he's showing honor. He's showing deference to the man that he respects. It says, and kissed him, and they asked each other of their welfare, and they came into the tent. And Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how the Lord delivered them. Now remember, there's no radio, there's no television in this day and time, there's no telegraph, so Jethro and Moses' wife and sons, they've had no news of all this going on. They don't know any of these exciting things that God has done for them and how he led them out of the land of Egypt and opened, parted the waters of the Red Sea. I mean, can you imagine being in the tent that day and hearing Moses tell the story himself? Well, we kind of get a glimpse of how it went because we read what he wrote here. But that must have been an exciting day in the tent there. Can't you imagine his two boys listening as Daddy tells the story of God parting the waters of the Red Sea? TR, you can just imagine. You've heard some of the stories your daddy has said. But everything Moses said was exactly the way it happened. But that must have been an exciting day for everybody there in the tent. Verse 10, and Jethro said, blessed be the Lord, who hath delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians. I can hear Marie back there. Blessed be the Lord. And that's what Jethro said. For delivering you and out of the hand of Pharaoh, who hath delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods. For in the thing wherein they dealt proudly, he was above them. Now, he says, now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods. Now, this is not implying that Jethro didn't already believe that the true and living God was greater than all those Egyptian gods. Obviously, he already believed that, or he wouldn't have been the priest of the Most High God. But that's right. I'm more convinced than ever. And can't you think of some times in your own life where you've seen God do something in your life or someone you cared about that was only something God could have ever done? You believed in God before that. You trusted Him before that. But now you know more than ever. He is the King of kings and Lord of lords and the God of gods. And so that's what That's exactly what Jethro was saying here. Now I know more than ever that this is so. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God. And Aaron came and all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. So Jethro, he offers a sacrifice to God. This wasn't something new for Jethro. Moses didn't teach him how to do it. He was already doing it. He had already been doing that, and he does it here. Verse 13, "And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people. And the people stood by Moses from the morning unto the evening." Now, that's 3 to 3.5 million people. You reckon 3 to 3.5 million people ever had any occasions where they got cross with each other? Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been in some churches that had, you know, maybe 200 or 300 people. They constantly had squabbles going on. That's churches. Here's 3.5 million people. Some of them don't even like each other. And I'm sure from time to time, especially living out there with it hot all the time, you can just imagine what it'd be like in the heat over there. You live here in Georgia during the summertime. It's hot. Sometimes there's not as much water as you'd like. Sometimes you might get tired of that manna in the morning and the quail in the evening, and you'd like to have something else. You can just imagine sometimes people's tempers got short. There were disagreements, quarrels about things. But, you know, even in the normal course of our lives today, when everything's going well, we still have things that come up where we have to go to court. Just last week for my business, I had to go to court because somebody, they didn't pay their bill. Well, you know, you might have some similar situations like this. All kinds of things come up on a regular basis, civil matters, not just people committing crimes, but civil interactions with each other that are not always so civil. And so Moses was supposed to be judging the people. I mean, who else were they going to take their case to? So they were all bringing their business to Moses for him to adjudicate. He was the judge for 3.5 million people. Yeah, wow. If you think you've got a lot of headaches, try keeping things civil between 3 million people. I mean, that's a headache. That'd be too much for anybody. But he was trying his best to do it. And he was doing it because they all looked to him for guidance. And they looked to him because not only was he the one leading them physically, but he was the one God had been speaking to. So who else are you going to go to but the man you know God's been speaking to? He's the one's got the truth. He's the one that has the answers. So that's why they were going to him. But my, that must have been a load. Look at verse 14. "And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, Why is this thing that thou doest? What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning unto even?" In other words, all day long, every day, from the time you get up to the time you go to bed, you're hearing cases between these people. That's all you ever do. Look what he said in verse 15. "And Moses said to his father-in-law, Because the people came unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and His laws." He said, what was I supposed to do? They started coming to me wanting to know what does God want done in this matter? And what was I going to do? Turn them away? Verse 17. "And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, The thing that thou doest is not good." Now here is the man that God just used to lead these people out of Egypt. Obviously he speaks to God on a personal basis. But he didn't have all the answers. His father-in-law says, Moses, I'm sorry, but what you're doing, he said, I'm gonna have to play the role of father-in-law here for a minute. I'm going to have to tell you, you're wrong in what you're doing. Now, I don't think anybody ever wanted to be corrected by a father-in-law or a mother-in-law, you know, but here's the man of God who wrote the first 5 books of the Bible, and his father-in-law is having to tell him he's wrong about something. Now, he could have said, listen, I'm the one God used to lead these people out of the land. I'm the one that had God part the water of the Red Sea. I'm the one that, did what God said and the water came out of a rock. I don't need you to tell me what I ought to be doing. But that's not the way he responded. He had respect for Jethro because he knew Jethro was a man of God. Not just because he was his father-in-law, but because he was a man of God. We need to make sure we do the same thing. We all have people in our lives that are godly men and women. Some of them might be older than us. Sometimes they might not be older than us. But if it's somebody that we know walks with God and they pull us to the side and say, I just want you to think about something, we all ought to be spiritually mature enough to at least listen to what they have to say. Doesn't mean they're always right. But if they care enough to tell us, maybe you want to reconsider this or that, we ought to at least give that some thought and some prayer. And so Moses apparently responds in the right way. Look what he says now in verse 18. Thou wilt surely wear away. He said, you're going to burn out, both thou and this people that is with thee. For this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice. I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. He said, let me just give you some counsel. And I'll tell you, most of the time I have learned as a pastor, I try not to give counsel unless it's asked for, because if it's not asked for, it's not usually appreciated anyway. But this is an instance where Jethro is giving Moses counsel because he loves him. He cares about him. He wants him to be a success. And so he says, let me give you a suggestion. He said, you teach all the people what God expects of them. You teach them all that. But then when they have issues that come up, if they're big issues, yeah, you hear them. But the small things that I've been listening to you hear these things every day, day in and day out, he says, pick judges among the people and let them hear the small things. In other words, you can't do it all. Yes. Let them bear the burden with you. Let them do some of the work to carry this load with you. And so what we see here in Scripture is really analogous to what we have in our own judicial system here in America today. We have the lower courts that hear the smaller affairs. Then we have the higher courts that hear the more important matters. And then, of course, here in the state of Georgia, we have a Georgia Supreme Court that if the lower courts can't settle something, the Georgia Supreme Court is the final arbiter, judicially speaking, of those things. In these United States, our court system, again, set up the same way. The lower courts, the appellate courts, and then the Supreme Court. And so that's basically the model that was laid out by Jethro, Moses' father-in-law. Yes, ma'am?
And also by him saying that, and if they do that, it teaches the people how to handle and discuss and fix some of their own little problems.
That's right. That's exactly right. It gets them involved in the process too, and they have more ownership in it as well, and they will appreciate it more. That's exactly right. Verse 23, if thou shalt do this thing, and God command thee so, then thou shalt be able to endure. And all this people shall also go to their place in peace. Notice he doesn't say, just do this because I said do it. He said in verse 23, if thou shalt do this thing and God command thee so. He said, you seek God, ask God if this isn't a good thing to do, and if God tells you you ought to do this, then go ahead and do it. And if you do it, then you're gonna last. You're not going to burn out, and the people will last as well. Verse 24, so Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard causes they brought unto Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves. And Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into his own land. So, we have the beginnings of the governmental structure that Israel is going to have for the next several hundred years until they demand a king from God. This structure is set up with judges. There are judges appointed over families, over tribes, and then Moses would judge over all the people. So you again have that different tiered system there, but you have the system of what you and I would think of as a confederation of the 12 tribes. The tribes are governing themselves. They're all self-governing tribes. And you know, that's the way our founding fathers created these United States. That's the way it was originally supposed to be. A republic of republics is the way our founding fathers described what they gave to us. Each state is supposed to be sovereign and govern its own affairs, except for those matters that have to do with the whole. That's the form of government that God gave through Jethro to Moses for the children of Israel. A republic of republics with judges ruling over at each level. When Israel gets to the point that they demand a king, they're asking God to let them change the form of government that God gave them that He intended for them to use. Now, I'm not going to say any more about it. I'm going to say it and leave it and let you mull it over for the next week. But in these United States, we had a system based upon this model that God gave Moses there in the wilderness. A republic of republics. Individual tribes that were self-governing. 12 of them. And we've gotten further away from that, just like Israel got away from that. Now we've got an all-powerful federal government that acts like a king over all of us, and we've gotten away from the biblical model that God gave the children of Israel. They were a lot better off when they followed God's model. We would have been a lot better off to have stuck with what we started with as well. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray you take our study this morning from the book of Exodus. Help us to see some practical things, not only for our country, but for our own lives as well. Help us to be willing to take counsel from those we ought to respect. And Lord, help us to be a blessing to each other, to serve you, and Lord, use us to minister to others. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.